This week we've been featuring a special series on the history of the blues with our rock historian, Ed Ward. On this final piece, Ed talks about the folk revival of the 60s, the British invasion, and how young Americans rediscovered the blues.
Freight train, run so fast. Freight train, run so fast. Please don't tell what train I'm on. They won't know what route.
There was a time when, if you owned a guitar, you just had to learn how to play Freight Train by Elizabeth Cotton. This grandmotherly black woman was the housekeeper for Charles and Ruth Crawford Seeger, parents of Mike and Peggy Seeger, two of the leading lights of the folk revival, which swept America's middle-class white kids in the early 60s. Overnight, it seemed, there was a thirst to learn about America's native musical legacy, and acoustic guitars flew off shelves as people learned to play like the Carter Family, Blind Blake, and Mississippi John Hurt. Some of these young pickers headed south to see if any of the old bluesmen were still alive. They were. Hurt was farming in Avalon, Mississippi, just like one of his old records had said. Skip James was living not far down the road. Son House had moved to Rochester, New York, but still had his guitar and his memories of Charlie Patton and Robert Johnson. There were also people down there who had never recorded in the 30s, but were willing to do so now, and among them was a mild-mannered man named Fred McDowell. McDowell's precise guitar playing and charismatic stage presence made him a folk festival favorite, and he liked playing with the kids, one of whom was a teenager named Bonnie Raitt, who later went on to record a number of his songs. Over in Texas, some Austin folkies found Mance Lipscomb, a relic of the old songster tradition with a life as dramatic as any novel.
Now I'm afraid the woman she done something she had never done before. She was in the bed with another man. Me and Fred spatted on the floor. He got mad. He got bang with his gun and his hand. Fred woman's son coming, went and fell down on her knees. I can hear her crying now, Freddy. Spare my life if you please. I know you're mad. You got bang with your gun and your hand. Freddy meets a policeman with his big gun in his hand. Fred, I heard you done killed your woman, he said. Yes, I'm looking for that man. He made me mad. I got bad with my gun in my hand. Fred said, look at you.
Both McDowell and Lipscomb were extensively recorded by Chris Strachwitz, who founded the Arhuli label in Berkeley, California, to document folk blues. He also sought out tapes from other folklorists like Harry Oster, who had made an important discovery in Louisiana's Angola prison.
Lord, I carried myself on pardon bow. You know I got a knot again. Been on the boat 3 times. Each time I was renowned. But all hope's in the good Lord. Lord, have mercy on me.
Robert Pete Williams' abstract songwriting and idiosyncratic guitar playing hinted at traditions long gone and musics that went all the way back to Africa. What the mass audience of folkies did not like, though, was electric music. When Muddy Waters, with a pedigree going straight to Robert Johnson, was asked to play the Newport Folk Festival, although he was one of the greatest electric blues guitarists of his day, he was forced to play acoustic. It took the British, of all people, to shame the folkies into acknowledging the riches at their doorstep. The Beatles may have looked toward black pop, but their rivals the Rolling Stones plundered the Chess Records catalog, recording numbers by Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, Bo Diddley, and of course the problematic sometime blues man Chuck Berry, along with Slim Harpo and other non-Chicagoans. As a British electric blues revival appeared in the Stones' wake, not to mention the valuable contribution of the integrated Paul Butterfield Band from Chicago, older bluesmen found their careers revived, playing psychedelic dance halls alongside groups with unfathomable names. And so, as the 60s ended, the blues stood at a crossroads. Either join forces with the young white audience, or remain a slowly shrinking genre, playing to an aging black constituency. Blues remained a component of soul music, though.
I know a little bluebird. I sure wish she would sing for me. I tell y'all, I know a little bluebird. I sure wish she would sing for me. I tell you why. She's been flying around so long. Oh, Lord. I wish she would land in my tree.
Performers like Little Milton stayed popular, mostly in the South, through the 70s, and other blues singers like ZZ Hill and Denise LaSalle charted from time to time. On the other side, labels like Alligator and Blind Pig recorded musicians who found the white club circuit to their liking. People like Hound Dog Taylor, an unremarkable Chicago musician who drove frat boys wild. Whatever the fate of individual performers, though, everyone agrees the blues will never die. It's too much a part of the fabric of all American music, from jazz to rock to soul. It stands no more chance of disappearing than, say, the key of G. It's been around too long, seen too much, and told the truth far too often.
Rock historian Ed Ward, nearly all the music he played on this week's History of the Blues series came from two box sets released by the Smithsonian Institution, The Blues and Mean Old World. Our blues series was produced by Phyllis Myers. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is NPR, National Public Radio.